think we need to be here. Yeah.
Okay.
So thank you, Mindy. And another great show by our friend Mindy Reed.
Let me give you the earphones. I was moving.
we're having our usual dance here at co-op. We're excited. So you're listening to Co-op Radio, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and streaming at co-op.org. The views expressed here are not necessarily the views of Co-op Radio or its board of directors, volunteer staff, or underwriters. And today we're going to be talking with Takena Eru, and Takena Eru, actually. And we will be right back. Thank you to Writing on the Air. You are listening to the ArtSpark TX Radio Hour on 91.7 FM, Co-op HD1, HD3, Hornsby, or on the live stream at www.coop.org. Co-op is community-led, solar-powered, volunteer-run radio. On the ArtSpark TX Radio Hour, we provide information and advocacy by and for the disability community. Hosted by Celia Hughes of ArtSpark Texas, where we spark the creative in everyone. We challenge perceptions of how people contribute by supporting an arts-inspired community of individuals with and without disabilities. The views expressed here are not necessarily the views or opinions of Co-op Radio, or of its board of directors, volunteers, staff, or underwriters. Welcome to the ArtSpark TX Radio Hour.
KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby.
So, welcome, Takena Eru. And I'm really, really happy to have you on our show. This is the last show of March 31st, and we've been featuring really wonderful, powerful women in the International Women's History Month. And so thrilled to have you here today with us. Dr. Ana Maria Takena Eru Maynard is a proud blood descendant of the Taínos of Boricán, which is Puerto Rican, indigenous for Puerto Rican. Her family line dates back 6,000 years to the Arcanios, ancient ones, and the island's earliest inhabitants. I can say that I can't trace my descendants back 6,000 years. I think that's very, very impressive. So, so welcome, Takena Eru.
Thank you.
We are happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So we always start out with a point of view from the news, and this is from I think it's probably an online publication called Pop Sugar, PS, and it's from November 4th of 2024, so pretty current, and it was written by Miguel Machado. And the title is Modern Taíno Tribes Are Fighting to Keep Their Culture Alive. And so in this, I really learned a lot about the indigenous peoples of Puerto Rico and some of the unique challenges that they are facing work to be recognized. Even they're not even really recognized. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, starting a little bit of history for those who don't know, yes, Puerto Rico has its own indigenous people, and they're called the Boricua Taínos, which named after the island. And the Taínos, before the Spanish conquest, the Taínos actually were thriving from Puerto Rico all the way up into Florida. And so we were talking about, you know, millions of people. And the Taínos were at the front of the hurricane that came and changed the landscape of the indigenous people, not only in the Caribbean, but all over, you know, South America and the United States. And so today, the Taino people are a people in restoration, reclaiming their heritage in lots of different ways. There are pockets of people who, like myself, always knew that I had Taino blood, because you just look at the pictures of my grandmother and she's about as pure-blooded as you can get. But Puerto Rico subscribed to the myth that the Taino people were completely extinguished 50 years after Columbus arrived. And that was not true. Including many Yucayeques, which would be a, sort of another word for tribe, ascending into the thick mountain ranges to survive. And there, our traditions survived. I know people that have traditions that go all the way back, handed from, you know, their grandparents and the ancestors. And I have other friends and people who were part of what they called the Jíbaro, the mountain people, who were the extension and evolution of the Taino people. And a lot of the traditions still remain with our medicine plants. And Puerto Rico as a whole, as a culture, was built on top of the traditions of the Taino people. We are the first root of the Taino people. So there are many people, not only on the island, but in the diaspora, using the talents that they have, the gifts that they have, to restore this culture for themselves, their communities, for the children. You know, what I do is through education, through music, the teaching of our true history, and, you know, keeping the culture alive. And what I say to people, you may not feel Taino the way that I do, because this is my spirit, this is my blood. You know, every breath I take is indigenous. But Puerto Rico as a whole deserves to know about their indigenous Taino Boricua people, because this was a culture that was taken from us, from sword and cannon. Yeah, there was a lot of people who died, especially from, you know, the diseases that were brought in by the Europeans that they had no resistance to. Many died from the abuses of being enslaved, basically. But they never died out completely. And so that is something that, you know, in the last, you know, and it's not this year or last year. This is a mission that's been going on for, you know, 40, 50 years. Of people really stepping up and saying, hey, we're still here, and this is our heritage.
Well, what we were talking about was that, you know, that this, that in order for a tribe or a people to be recognized at the federal level, you know, I was asking, from this article, I was asking, well, is this because Puerto Rico was not part of the original American colonies? Is this why you're not recognized? But it actually goes back much further than that, to when Puerto Rico was still a colony or
of Spain.
Of Spain, yes.
So in 1800, Spain removed from the census indigenous people. You could no longer declare yourself an indigenous people. And so our death was, complete death was on paper. And so for that reason, you know, Puerto Rico does not recognize the Taino people officially.
Well, and with that sort of death on paper, I'm sure that all records or any kind of record keeping or anything was were either expunged or no longer collected. And so that's probably very effective way of also destroying a culture, is if there's no way of recording what the cultural traditions and history and heritage. So that was, and then when Puerto Rico became a, are they a territory or a protectorate?
We're a territory.
Territory. Mm-hmm. That was something that obviously the United States, with its abysmal record of dealing with the indigenous peoples that were on the continent, I'm sure they just didn't even think about it. You know, it was like, oh, okay, well, we don't have to worry about that.
Well, the one thing that the Taino people have, if you remember the history, the ships that came as part of the conquest, for the most part, were men, right? And so the first generation of people on the island that were born that were a mixture of indigenous women, Taino women, and Spanish men, a very important marker remained, and that is the mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is your unbroken chain of legacy traced all the way back through your mother's line, and it is unbroken. And because most of the indigenous people have that marker through their mother's line, they have a way to trace that they're still here. So, for example, if we were completely extinguished in the late 1400s or the early 1500s, there wouldn't be anybody left with this mitochondrial DNA in their blood. And so, in fact, in the year 2000, there was important studies that were done, sponsored by the National Science Foundation, that discovered that 62% of the Puerto Rican people have mitochondrial DNA that is from their mother's line, that is Taino, indigenous.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, not everyone's going to feel that Taino spirit the way that I do, but just to know that we're still here and we deserve to know about our culture. And that's how I discovered. My mom laughed at me because she said, well, why are you taking this mitochondrial DNA test? Look at your grandmother. You know you're Taino. But I did it for the cause, to add another positive check mark in that effort of people trying to you know, count the numbers. What I discovered from that was that not only was I Taino, but my family has been on the island for 6,000 years, part of the Arcaicos, or as we say in Spanish, los primeros de los primeros, the first people. And that was a revelation for me, because it helped me understand why I'm such a fierce protector of my island, right? Because my family's been there for 6,000 years.
That's amazing. That is so, when you think about it, the vastness of that knowledge, and going back 6,000 years is almost incomprehensible, you know, for me as a white person, because I don't think we have that mitochondrial connection. I don't know. Maybe to look at my mother's lineage, perhaps I could go back a lot farther. So that's,
well, everybody has that, yeah, mitochondrial connection. It's that you're going to be connected to other indigenous people from where your mother came from.
Right.
Because everybody's indigenous from somewhere.
Somewhere.
Right?
Absolutely. I love that. I think I might have to investigate that. So this article was really talking about there is a movement that is out of New York, if I am where they're trying to look at and trying to work to establish recognition of the Taino people. And of course, there's a two-prong approach that has to happen here. One is you have to get the government of Puerto Rico to begin to recognize that before you can even then take it to the United States federal to begin to be recognized. I think organizations such as your center are so valuable to bring this culture and to bring this information forward.
Thank you. So to give some credit for the article, for people who haven't read it, there's a Robert Borrero Mucaro. He is the leader, president of the United Taino Confederation of Taino People. And he, for years and years and tens of years, has been working in that, exactly in that political endeavor to get rights for indigenous people, not only Puerto Rico, but around the world, and also, concern about getting Tainos recognized. So the one piece of good news that was recent and has been published is that part of his organization, they have Yukayeke is the word for tribe, sort of. It's more than that, but we can go with that for this broadcast. That he has a fraction of his people are in the Virgin Islands. And just recently, and I believe it was this year, that the Virgin Islands has recognized the Taino people of that island.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, that's wonderful news.
And
yeah.
So I don't know what the UTCP is cooking up next, but it's very exciting that they're making progress in that. As for someone like me, my gift and my focus is education. And music and art and teaching the history and taking care of my people right here and right now. And so I'm grateful for people like Mucaro, who's doing that hard work while I focus on educating our people now and the community around me and keeping our culture alive.
Well, those two go hand in hand.
Yes.
Because
we're a package.
Yeah, because you can't have success at a political level unless you have awareness and advocacy and education at the local level. The two go hand in hand.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so all over the not only diaspora, which is here on the mainland, but also in Puerto Rico, everyone is doing their part. We are all distinct communities like we were in the ancestral days, distinct communities, but we all pull together for the greater big picture.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the article we've been talking about, you can find it online. It's from Pop Sugar, PS, and it was published on November 4th, 2024. I think if you were to Google modern Taino tribes are fighting to keep their culture alive, it will come up. It's a really interesting and informative article, and I'm so glad that we have Takino Iru here to talk about it. So, before we move into any questions, you said the word music, and I see this really interesting looking flute that looks like it was made out of a femur, or a bone of some sort. So could you talk to us a little bit about this? I think you're going to play us a song, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, I brought two flutes that are Taino traditional flutes, and one is a femur. And so in the ancestral days, this might have been the femur of an ancestor.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
But this is a femur of not a human.
That's okay.
And so I'll play this one first. And then later I've got something that would be equivalent to an ocarina of clay. And that'll be much joyful. But this is a moody song. And it's called Ancestor's Call.
Yes, and this goes out to all of the Taino people who are listening. Such a lovely way to introduce our guest today, Dr. Ana Maria Tekina Eru Maynard.
Thank you. And many times the flute piece is accompanied by our authentic drums, the Mayawakan and the Mahwe and Maracas, and so much fuller sound, but at the base of it is this flute calling my ancestors.
And I think they're here with us now. So can you tell us a memory, maybe of a Taino gathering or from your childhood or something that really stands out with you as something that was remarkable?
I think as a child, when I would look at the picture of my grandmother and I'd see that Taino face, I would feel such a connection to her. And I didn't understand it because, you know, my personal family wasn't educated in our Taino ways. But then as I grew older, 20 years ago, I met a wonderful man. He was actually the cacique, a chief of his own people in Puerto Rico. And he took me under his wing and taught me so many things. And his name was Cacique Bopil Veguilla. And he has since passed away. But with all that he taught me, as I looked back on my childhood, It's really interesting that even though you don't know what you're doing, your DNA remembers. And I remember as a child having this uncontrollable, I don't know if the word is fetish, I don't know if that's a good word, but it's you know, this desire to have shells. And so I had all kinds of shells, and I still do today. I laugh at myself. I have, you know, trunks of shells of different kinds. But people would say to me, "Ooh, look at those big shells, and you need to get rid of them because they're bad luck," you know. And the other thing that I collected was maracas. And when I got to be an adult and more educated in our traditions, I discover that the maraca is a ceremonial instrument And the shells are also ceremonial. And so I actually, if you ever see me in ceremony, I open up and call the four directions with a giant conch shell. And those were the shells that I was collecting as a child. So it was, it's sort of like your ancestors are always calling to you. And then someday you may be gifted with the door opening, and I call it an awakening to your traditions.
So that's beautiful. Why, where did this notion that shells are bad luck come from? That's not from your tradition, right?
That is, it was, well, I grew up in a Puerto Rican, you know, in neighborhood. So everybody was from Puerto Rico. And for some reason, it was a superstition. I don't know where it came from. I just never believed it.
I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that it's an island nation. Because I know, like, I lived for a while in Taiwan, and there were certain things that you couldn't do, or you know, because it was bad for fishermen, and so there was this whole tradition around keeping your fishermen, your family, safe. So I'm wondering if, I'm just making it up here, but maybe shells had something to do with that. It'd be interesting to.
Yeah,
but I'm glad you didn't listen to them.
No, absolutely not. I would look that.
Your ancestors were like, no, don't listen to them.
Little feisty 6-year-old says, don't touch my shells.
I can imagine. I collect rocks, so maybe I'll find out that I go back to, I lived on a rocky beach or somewhere. Talk to me a little bit about, you've been studying and have been trained by island elders in your oral history and ancestral and living traditions since like 1998. So can you talk a little bit, and also in the languages of Taino, Spanish, and West African roots. So can you talk a little bit about the various cultural customs and traditions that you are carrying forward through the center here?
Yes. So when I first moved to Austin, and then I was already married, and when I had my first baby, I realized that my son would never have that beautiful growing up life that I had.
So were you raised on the island of Puerto Rico?
Better, even better. I was raised in a Puerto Rican neighborhood in New York.
Oh, okay.
Now, yeah. Of course, I would have preferred to have been raised on the island, but I wasn't, and that's okay. But what it made me, it meant that I grew up around elders who missed home.
Yeah.
And they dreamed about going home every day. And they kept the culture alive and vibrant. And so that is how I grew up.
Okay.
In the middle of my rich heritage, including my dad, who was a party animal. I mean, he was always celebrating our culture. And so that's what I thought about when I had my first son. Because, you know, it is what makes my heart beat. And it made me sad that he wouldn't have that. And so I started the Puerto Rican Cultural Center. So this is 1997 with what I knew. And then, of course, after, you know, starting it, I realized I actually don't know a lot. You know, I know enough to get it started. But really, if I wanted to do a Puerto Rican Cultural Center to the depth that it needed to be, I needed to go back home to Puerto Rico and get trained. And so I have many, many wonderful teachers that they are the tradition bearers and the wisdom keepers and the cultural tradition keepers of not only the Taino, but also our what was the evolution of West Africa and Puerto Rico, our, as we call it, our Afro-Boricua traditions. And also our mountain traditions, which were the evolution of the Taino people mixed with Spaniard and a little dash of Africans as well. You know, the Taino fled to the mountains, but then So did the enslaved people that were on our island from West Africa, and they would escape into the mountains. And then the Spaniards would escape into the mountains because there were, you know, people who weren't on board with the abuse and all of that. And so all of this intermarriage created this rich mountain people. And so it's interesting that all of these cultures have a very distinct flavor. And then the last piece of it is the culture of the people who own the plantations. So that's another whole distinct folkloric piece of Puerto Rico. So it's really interesting that our island is just 35 miles wide and 110 miles long, and we have so much rich culture. I've been doing this for 28 years. And every year I go back home to Puerto Rico and I learn more stuff and I bring it back to the people. And it's so much rich history and learning that it's never ending, you know.
That's great. Well, we are talking with Dr. Ana Maria Tequina Herro, and we will be right back. So we're back. And this is co-op, the ArtSpark TX Radio Hour, and today we're celebrating the last day of March's International Women's History Month, talking with Tequina Herro of the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, which is here in Austin. And it is the only center in Texas and the Southwest so that's affiliated with the Institute of Puerto Rican Culture. And is that located in New York, or where is that located?
The Institute of Puerto Rican Culture is the government's art agency, and they're located on the island itself.
Ah, okay.
And they just celebrated, okay, don't quote me, I think it's like the 60th or 70th year anniversary.
Okay. And so you are recognized by them because of the fact that you go back and are trained and work with the elders and work with the teachers and bring that information here to Austin. So talk a little bit about the Austin Center and how many people you have and how many events you do a year and a little bit about all of that.
Yes. So the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, I'm the founding director. We founded it in 1997. And the idea, we made it a nonprofit immediately because I didn't want it to be, you know, like Tekinairu's dance school. I wanted it to be the Puerto Rican Cultural Center for the people. And we have, all throughout the year, we have active programs. So we have classes during the week. Right now we're up to about 10 classes a week for children, all the way through adults, beginners, professional level, music, dance. We do stick fighting called Coco Ballet, which you can see in my face. It's one of my favorites.
She's got a big beaming smile on her face.
And it's the classes are open to everyone. It's we are there to share our culture, not only for ourselves, but for everyone.
So it's not like only people of Puerto Rican descent or Taíno. It's for everyone.
For everyone.
Wants to learn. And I know that. We follow you at ArtSpark. And actually, years ago now, you know, We did some programming at Texas State Parks, and that's how we first met you. Was that Tequina went to a park, and I think did you teach singing? Were you doing singing in the park?
It was called When Nature Sings was okay. The name of the program.
Right, and we got really positive feedback from it. And so talk a little bit about what that workshop was.
Thank you. So, but first I want to mention that at the Cultural Center, we actually, beyond classes, we also do events almost every month out of the Cultural Center. We only have two events a year that are in a rented space. One is a festival and the other one is a play. And the rest are events that are out of our Cultural Center. And so last year, for example, in 2024, we gave 14 events to the community.
That's more than one a month, everyone.
Yes. Now, When Nature Sings, so that was a program that was an expression of my Taino heritage. And in 2012, I wrote a book, and it was called When Nature Sings, A Taino Journey. And so that program that we did for you, it was McKinney Falls, I believe, State Park.
Okay.
And that was a presentation for families, and it was a combination of anecdotes, music, and dance. And the purpose of that presentation was to share with people, and so I always end up going back to the Taino-ness in me, but nature. Nature is a very alive and important part of being an Indigenous person. You know, nature is conscious, you know, and nature is always speaking to you if you stop and pay attention. And so that presentation in McKinney Falls, one favorite moment is that I'm teaching a song and a dance to the people that were there, and especially the children. And we were flying around like big birds, raptors. And as we were flying, a big hawk came flying directly overhead, flying low. And everybody stopped and were frozen and looked up, because it was hard to believe that this was happening, you know. And I looked up and I pointed and I said, "See? This is what I mean. Nature's always listening. Nature's always speaking."
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's lovely. Yeah, the whole purpose of that, of those workshops, were to be out in nature and to work in nature. And so, you know, we just did a call to our artists and to see what people came up with. And so we were expecting the typical, you know, use nature to make art, and, you know, and then came in this one about, let's go sing outside. And we were like, that sounds fabulous. So, yeah, so that was wonderful. And I know that the workshops and the different presentations that you provide and offer, the experiences through the Cultural Center, are all grounded in those beliefs and in the spirit of who you are, as you call your ancestors through to help you reach the community. So you've got a few coming up, right? Have you got a couple of activities coming up this month?
Yes. So next Sunday, April 6th, we have what we call, it's the 8th annual Picnic Ritmo y Baile. And so we call it the picnic. But what it really is, it's phase one of our annual heritage project that we do with masters from Puerto Rico and a cultural exchange with another culture. And so it is a cultural exchange between Puerto Rico and Bahia, Brazil.
That is really exciting.
And so we're expecting, you know, 300 people out on the grass, bring your picnic blankets and beach chairs, and we're going to have food being sold by Borinquen Roots. They're going to come, and it's a little mom-and-pop restaurant, and they're going to be selling food. And so, and we're going to be doing free performances for Puerto Rican culture, as well as we're going to have representations of Brazil as well. And not only is it going to be performances, but it's interactive. So expect that you will be dragged from the grass to dance with us.
When I have looked at some of your videos, I'm like, oh, everyone participates.
Yes, yes.
which is really nice. And where is the center located for people that may not know where it is?
It's down on Tillery Street in East Austin. And towards the end of the month, April 27th, we are celebrating Earth Day. And that one is from the perspective of the Taino perspective. It would normally be in Taino traditions, part of the spring ceremonies, you know, the gratefulness of the rains. And, you know, we've been having some rain in Austin, so that's great. And so we'll be celebrating Earth Day from the perspective of Taino. So there'll be a lot of music and dance that people will be participating with us. And then the third event is on June 8th, which is a Sunday. And we're having our Salsa and Heritage Festival. So this is the 14th annual Salsa and Heritage Festival. And people get dressed up. It's in a ballroom. Bring your dance shoes. And then in the middle of a basically a salsa dance, there is a show of Puerto Rico. And it's going to be an extension of the Puerto Rico-Brazilian exchange that we're having, except that it's going to be you know, professional level, creative, new material that we're going to be actually putting together this week.
So talk to me a little bit about this Brazilian exchange. I mean, do you is this the first time you've worked with this organization, with these folks?
Yes, so this is the first time that we do Brazil. A couple of years ago, we did an exchange with Colombia, and another year we did an exchange with Mexico. And so every year we pick another culture. And so we have sort of leading the charge. We have two people that are tradition bearers of culture from Bahia, Brazil. Marcia Workman, who's a wonderful woman in the community, and Luis Continho, who is a master drummer. And then we're also working with Capoeira Luanda from San Antonio. So they are a capoeira school and center in San Antonio, but the connection there is that their lineage holder was from Brazil. And so it's very focused on the traditions of Brazil, and it's going to be very exciting.
So is when you do these kind of exchanges, is it something like you do, okay, we're going to work with this, these Brazilian groups for a year and go back and forth with exchange? Folks from your center go to Brazil and folks from Brazil come here, as well as other local folks that you identify?
Well, the plane tickets
are a little expensive.
And so we're actually flying in people from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
So the Puerto Rico part of the exchange, obviously we're Puerto Rican and we're here, but the special part of that exchange is that we're flying in masters from Puerto Rico. And so
which you do every year,
which
right?
We do every year.
Yeah.
And so Nercy Cordova from Loíza, so the Afro-Puerto Rican traditions of the bomba from Loíza is going to be front and center. And Pablo Luis Rivera and Raul de la Paz. And so what happens is this project lasts about 6 months.
Okay.
The public sees the picnic, and the public sees the festival in June. So what's happening is we have all semester, we have been quietly working with Brazil. And we're learning some of their music and learning how to sing in Portuguese. And so that's part of the exchange, you know, learning about their culture.
And so is this like Zoom or Skype or
no,
something?
No, they're here.
Oh, they
so
are.
So the people
oh,
from Brazil are physically here, which makes
fabulous.
It wonderful for
yeah,
us. And
yeah.
We usually pick the other culture. We usually pick people that are local. So
okay.
That way we can work with them.
Oh, okay.
And so what's going to happen towards the middle of this week is our masters from Puerto Rico are coming. And so what we're going to be doing quietly out of the eyesight of the general public is we are building the performance that will happen in June. So that's where the true cultural exchange, we're going to be creating fusion music, we're going to be creating this wonderful show for June. But in the meantime, while the masters from Puerto Rico are here and we have the people from Brazil in the house, we're going to have our picnic and share a little tiny bit of that with the general public.
Just get the general public excited, get their appetites whetted so they want to come back in June.
And then in June, it's going to be spectacular.
That's great.
And the masters from Puerto Rico will be returning. and it's going to be definitely, you know, professional, authentic, high level, the best you can do quality.
So that's so exciting. So has this always been your tradition from when you first started, that you tried to do these cultural exchanges?
So we started in 2001. So this is actually a project that we have done in a different format since 2001. So that would be, what, 24 years?
Yeah.
24 years of our 28 years. We started the first 10 years just working with our own Puerto Rican masters because we had so much to learn. And even though I had been going back and forth studying since 1998, the goal was to also train the people around me. So, you know, at the cultural center, we have classes and we give people, you know, sort of a foundational level learning. But then every year we pick different masters to bring in that represent different corners of our culture. The masters that are the tradition bearers, the recognized families that hold these traditions, and we bring them to Austin and we build a project around their being here. So the first 10 years, it was just Puerto Rico coming here. And then after that, we started doing the cultural exchanges. So this is the 14th annual cultural exchange.
That's right. That's really exciting. So I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that your name, your anglicized name, is Dr. Ana Maria Maynard. So you have a doctorate in electrical and computer engineering from Carnegie Mellon.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes, I do.
And what drew you to that?
I kind of laugh because I'm left-handed. So both of my sides of my brain are very active. And if you know me, I'm one of the most active, prolific persons that I know. And part of me can't live without the art. And the other part of me really loves numbers and science and all of that. And so when it came time to go to college, I thought to myself, because I actually grew up, in a pretty humble family. We were not people with money by any means. And I said to myself, do you want to be a musician or do you want to be an engineer? And so I think, you know, sort of getting myself in a place where I could get out of the humbleness that I grew up with was a calling for me. And so I actually went to a university in, they called it Brooklyn Poly. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn Poly is where I went. And then over the years, I got promoted. Apparently, I'm part of now the New York University system. And then when I was finishing my bachelor's degree, I remember being in the IEEE office, the electrical engineers, place where we would hang out. And there was a phone call that came in from Bell Laboratories asking for me. And they wanted to know if I wanted to try out for a fellowship to get a doctorate. And of course, being a streetwise girl, I said yes. And then I hung up the phone. And I asked everybody, what's a doctorate? I had no idea. And before I knew it, I was registered at Carnegie Mellon University, and off I went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So that was quite an experience for the first time to be out of
absolutely.
My culture.
Absolutely.
What do you mean you don't sell coffee at this grocery store? I mean, it was just, you know, culture shock. And so I spent my 6 years there, got my PhD, and then came back to a place where there are lots of Latino people, you know.
So did you come to Austin from there?
Yes.
And did you come with a husband in tow?
Is that yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I met a wonderful man. Carnegie Mellon Engineering, we laugh because there were more Daves than women. More Davids than women.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
The there were 20 women and about 200 men. That was the ratio in the PhD program. And so, and I lucked out and got the most handsome, smartest one.
Of course you did. And did he have connections? Did he have roots in Austin, or did work bring you both here?
Yeah, work brought us here.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. And I have to ask, you've got feathers. Are they actually tied into your hair, or are they part of an earring?
So, yeah, depending on what I'm wearing, sometimes they're tied to my hair. These particular ones are an earring, yeah.
And what are the feathers, and what's the significance of them?
Well, I have lots and lots and lots of different feathers, and so this is just respecting my ancestors, and okay. I put it on and letting them know that I know that they're around.
You know? It's lovely.
And when we do ceremony that we are in the full, we call it atuendo, but other indigenous people might call it regalia. Then I have a penacho, which would be like a headpiece that is Taino style of the chief, of the cacique, because I am the cacique of my community here, elected cacique after 15 years of leading ceremony in 2023. They actually insisted that I take on this role as cacique because they wanted to be a more formal yucayeque. And so my responsibility has increased. It's not a role of honor or glory. It's a hard work,
yeah,
and that of a servant. And so when we do have a full event that is a ceremonial, you'll see me wear that crown. But in my everyday life, you just have this little feather, fast and light, hanging from my ear.
Well, and they're not little. They're probably 6 inches, each one of them. So, yeah, so it's beautiful. The different sheens, I've been looking at them. There's one with the greenish sheen and quite a few with these grayish brown. It's really lovely. So I think we need to go out with a celebration song.
Okay. So I'm holding a flute that is made of earth clay. And this song is called Guaracuya.
And it's a rooster, is it not? Or is it just a bird? It's definitely a bird.
Some kind, yeah. It's in the shape of a bird, and he's got
quite a pronounced
feathers on his head. This was given to me, interestingly enough, by a friend who. This is before I was named cacique of my community.
Okay.
And she brought this from Colombia. And it is in the style that we use in Puerto Rico, but this particular one was from Colombia. And she said to me, this flute is called cacique. And I wasn't cacique yet. And I had no idea that was in my future. And so this is a very special flute for me.
Great.
And so the song is called Guaracuya, which means the loving light. Tainos are very spiritual all the time. And so it's a remembrance of the beautiful energy that comes from above that blesses all of us every day.
Lovely.
Okay. All right.
I love that. I could see the bird little tail flickering, you know, because, you know, one of our, I go out birding with one of our former staff members, and just love the way that birds move, and that song definitely tries to pick up or sort of portrays the bird.
Thank you.
You know, with the way they move and their tails wag and stuff like that.
Well, on next Sunday's picnic, I'm going to be there as the leader of my tribe, as cacique, and we're going to open our picnic with this song, except there'll be lots of drums accompanying me. And towards the middle of the picnic, we're going to allow people to come and dance with us. I'm going to do a Taino ceremonial dance and invite people to come and share that with me. And so if people want to come to the picnic and bring their favorite maraca from home, they will really enjoy it.
And so, again, where can people go to find out more information?
So if you Google Puerto Rican Cultural Center, Austin, Texas, we will come up. And we have a website and we have an events page there. Or they can find us on Facebook. And we have we keep a running list of all of our events on Facebook, and we have a little Instagram thing happening there, but it's not as complete as the Facebook page.
Yeah, and I think it's important that it's Puerto Rican Cultural Center in Austin, Texas, because
yes.
If you just do Puerto Rican Cultural Center, it will bring up
Lots of different places, yeah, all over the country.
but the one here is the only one that's recognized in Southwest United States. Are there others in other parts of the country?
There's nothing called the Puerto Rican Cultural Center that is recognized. Chicago has a cultural center that's also recognized by the Institute of Puerto Rican Culture. And I believe there's still an active one in Florida. And so we're the only three active centers recognized on the mainland.
Okay.
And then, of course, Puerto Rico has plenty on the island.
So we have two events coming up that where you can get more involved this month, or, and then there's a third one in June. But Earth Day should be lovely.
It's going to be lovely.
And also then the picnic. So should people bring their baskets of goodies to share, or will there be food there?
So the picnic, we're blessed to have the participation of Borinquen Roots, that they're
right.
A nine, yeah, mom and pop restaurant.
Right.
And so if you have had Puerto Rican food, you know that they're amazing. And if you've never had it, they're amazing. So come
right.
Hungry. For Earth Day, it's since we want to keep it simple, there are no vendors. So people are welcome to bring their baskets and their waters because there won't be any vendors of any kind for
okay.
Earth Day.
All righty. And having lived in New York City for a long time, I will attest that Puerto Rican food is delicious. So thank you, Tekina Eru, for being here today. And stay tuned, because The Radio Still Screams is about to take over the airwaves.
Thank you
for
having
me.
Thank you
again. You're very welcome.